Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Mark the Q. I'm your host. I'm very privileged to have a good friend of mine and a comedian. We've had her on the show before. We're finally catching up again. She has quite a few projects coming up. A Weekend with the Family, which will be going out in the theaters starting next week. Also, she's been featured on Profiles of Hope, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. You may recognize her from the TV show Las Vegas and House Hunters and the show Kingdom, as well as from here on out. I would like to welcome back Suzanne Wong with us right now. How are you doing, Suzanne?
Hi, Mark with a Q. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I believe this is how you pronounce your first name. Hold on one second. Give me a second here. Cool?
Yes, I love it. I love that. Suzanne with a Z. You're Mark with a Q. I'm Suzanne with a Z. My name is not Susan, yes. Which is spelled S-U-S-A-N. In fact, Whitney Houston had a song called My Name is Not Susan, which I thought was uncanny because I've said that so many times in my life. And my last name is spelled Wang, but it's pronounced Wong, so that's confusing to everybody. It's a soft A sound. So.
Yeah, if you've watched the trailer to A Weekend with the Family, they do get it right. So
they do get it right. I was so ecstatic about that. Now, is your name Mark with a Q on your birth certificate?
It is. It is.
Really?
Yes, it is.
That's
long
unusual.
Story on that.
What's the story?
It's a long story. Oh, the story goes. Okay, the story goes is that my brothers and my mother had a bet that when I was born. Now, my mom said there was going to be a girl, and the boys all said that all the boys said there was going to be a boy, and my mom said there was a girl. So they had a running bet. So when I was born, the boys got to name me, and they named me Mark, and they were naming me Mark all the way straight through the pregnancy. They were calling me Mark in my mom's womb. So my mom wanted the name to be a little different. So she said, okay, we're going to go ahead and put it in with the Q. And my brothers were like, wait one second, you know, we got to name them. Now you get to name them basically with the extra little Q. So they said, okay, well, my mom said, okay, here's the deal. You get to also name his middle name. So yeah, that's the kind of the story behind it.
Whoa. So what's your middle name?
I'll give you a hint. The year before I was born, there was a baseball record that was broken. So my middle name is the last name of the person that broke that record. I don't know what happened in 1975, but I'll give you a quick.
Wait, is that Hank Aaron?
Yes. Yep.
So your middle name is Hank or Aaron? Your middle name
Aaron.
Is Aaron?
Yep.
I love that. I got to interview Hank Aaron when I was a field host on, it was either Breakfast Time on FX or Fox After Breakfast on Fox, because he had opened a chain of fast food restaurants, and I got to interview him. It was amazing, amazing to be able to, because I'm a huge baseball fan. I don't know if you know that. I lived in Boston from 86 to 91 and became a huge Red Sox fan. I was at Fenway Park all the time. I would go by myself. I knew all the ticket office guys, all the ushers. I became friends with Al Bumbry, who was the first base coach. He got me, one year on my birthday, he got me two signed baseballs, one by Dwight Evans and one by Roger Clemens. So I have a love affair with baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I have yet to meet the man, the myth, the legend. You know, I'd love to at some point.
Your namesake?
But, yeah, my namesake, as it were.
That's incredible. Now, are you a baseball fan, or do you play baseball?
I mean, off and on. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan. So you know,
You're a Cubs fan. Are you from Chicago?
No, I'm not from Chicago.
Why are you a Cubs fan?
I'm originally from Montana, actually. But the thing was is that I lived in Indiana for so many years. And also the fact that I'm a fan of I'm trying to remember the director's name. There's a director that always featured Chicago in his movies, and I cannot remember his name off the top of my head. He did like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He did did all those comedies. They're all basically based in Chicago area, like 16 Candles. I can't remember.
You mean John
off
Hughes?
Off my head. John Hughes. Yeah, I'm a huge John Hughes fan, and of course John Hughes is a huge Cubs fan. So
that's
that was
amazing.
Kind of
you know,
reasoning.
That's so funny. My boyfriend Jeff Bazane, he's the lead singer of Gary Sinise's Lieutenant Dan band, and Gary's from Chicago, and Jeff's from the Chicago area. So I have yet to be able to go to Wrigley Field and go to a Cubs game. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, I did that as well, and that was kind of an interesting story. I went on a train trip for 3 months. I got a pass from Amtrak, and I just took 3 months to just travel. And one of the things that I got to do was go to
the train. I love traveling by Amtrak.
Yeah, it's been a while since I have, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to kind of see the country the way that it was, and you know, I did a couple shows on the train, physically on the train while I was on the train. I was doing shows still, so it was pretty interesting. So I got to go see Wrigley Field, and you know, I was right behind home plate, and there was a foul tip that came towards me, and you know, and I'm interested to see if there's any video of it, because I was in a pretty unusual getup at that point, because I was going to the air guitar competition later that day.
Wait, you're an air guitar competitor?
I consider myself retired. I did it for like 3 or 4 years. And then I retired.
What is the name of that brilliant air guitar documentary?
Air Guitar Nation?
Yes. You know what's so funny? Talk about coming full circle. I'm friends with Judd Nelson, who is famous for being in John Hughes movies. And he's the one that showed me Air Guitar Nation, the documentary.
Yeah, you know, and that was like the first year. That was the first year they ever did it. And then I did it was the third year, and then I went like third, fourth, fifth, and then sixth, and then after that, I kind of retired from the thing. I did well the first time around. The second time around, I did okay. It just seemed like I was going downhill though after that. So, although the Sklar brothers were judging one of the times I did it, and I think it was the LA one that I did.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah,
I've met them before and performed on stage with them before. In fact, when you live in Las Vegas now?
Yes.
When was our last interview? Was it when I won the Las Vegas Comedy Festival?
I think it might have been. It might have
been.
I think it was roughly around that time. I mean, it's been a while.
You realize that
we'll
that was 12 years ago. I have a special place in my heart for Las Vegas for many reasons. I've been there many times in my life to perform or visit, travel, have fun, do trade shows back when I was doing trade shows early on in my acting career. And then I got the part as Polly, the crazy spa manager on NBC's Las Vegas for 4 seasons. And so that was set in Las Vegas, although we shot in Los Angeles. And Las Vegas happens to be the first, when I first became a stand-up comedian, the first festival I ever submitted myself to compete in was the Las Vegas Comedy Festival as my alter ego, Sung-hee Park, who's fresh off the boat from Korea and has never done stand-up before. And I ended up winning the Best Up-and-Coming Comedian Award there, and they gave me a trophy, and I was so excited, especially having just started doing stand-up. I had been a dramatic actress for 15 years prior to that. So it's sort of the opposite of, I know that Shawn Polofsky had been doing mostly stand-up comedy, and now she's doing dramatic acting. So I sort of went the opposite route.
Yeah, I kind of find it interesting. It's an interesting thing because I cover fighting sports as well. I think you pretty much know that.
Mm-hmm.
But on my other podcasts, my other websites, etc. But I find a lot of these fighters are now, as soon as they hit retirement, they're turning to stand up comedy. It's really kind of interesting that some of these people are, you know, and there's so many similarities between comedy and fighting as well, because there is that kind of struggle of you being there by yourself, you know, you having to overcome certain obstacles in terms of when you're on stage, you know, knowing that you're having a poor showing and having to come back from that. So there, and you know, it's just, it's an interesting, It's an interesting thing, and you see a lot of comedians hang out with fighters and et cetera.
That's crazy.
So
I never thought about that before. You know, I was at the Tyson Holyfield fight at the weigh-in covering it for the show Fox After Breakfast, the morning show with Tom Bergeron that I was a roving road warrior sort of field host for. I covered the weigh-in between Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield, and I interviewed Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield and Don King right before the infamous fight where Tyson bit Holyfield's ear off. I was there. I was at the weigh-in. I talked to Evander Holyfield. He couldn't have been nicer or more charming or funny. And then I talked to Don King, and he makes for great television because you ask him one question, and he's just crazy and loquacious. So you ask him one question, and it's just a nonstop stream of hilarity and fascination. I think at one point he started to make up a song about me that rhymed in the middle of his interview. And then I interviewed Mike Tyson, and I was warned by Mike Tyson's publicist that he may not answer any of my questions. He might walk by all of us. It was me and all the major networks were in line to interview him when he came off of the platform after the weigh-in. And he walked past every single interviewer except for me. I was the only female in the whole room. He stopped for me. I probably asked him 15 questions. He answered every single one of them. And I do have to tell you that the potential for violence at any moment felt palpable in the air, like you could cut it with a knife. But nothing happened, meaning he just answered my questions incredibly graciously and then went on. And the CEO of Showtime, Matt Blank, who was in charge of making all that go right for me interviewing Mike Tyson, he pulled me aside and he said, "I don't think you realize what a coup that was, that he answered all of your questions and nobody else's." So that happened in Las Vegas as well. And, you know, I saw Mike Tyson's one-man show on HBO. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. It's really interesting. I mean, I think I want to say he's calmed down in his age, but it seems like he kind of went, you know, he's kind of calmed down a bit. You know, it seemed like after the hangover thing, he kind of got back in step with society. That was kind of his big coup in terms of changing, you know, how people perceive Mike Tyson. So now he's this very lovable guy nowadays. I think there was some kind of documentary or something about him and the pigeons as well.
I didn't see the documentary about him and the pigeons. But what is it with fighters and birds, like in Sylvester Stallone's movie Rocky, remember? He had the bird coop up on the rooftop.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Although yeah, it was chicken and the chicken, you know, maybe it's because of an exercise thing or wanting to fly, you know, wanting to fly now.
Yes, that makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to say the least in terms of that as well. I mean, it's great to be able to see that kind of dynamic. But let's talk a little bit about you because you have so much stuff going on too, and that's one of the big reasons why I wanted you back on. First of all, let's talk about this project that you're a part of. It's called Profiles of Hope. They did a really good, interesting profile of you on their website as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I was asked last year to do a keynote speech at the LA County Department of Mental Health, and I've been doing keynote speaking for probably 15 years, but since my journey with stage 4 breast cancer, I had breast cancer 3 times in the past 9 years because, like most Asians, I'm an overachiever. Can't do that just once, Mark, with a Q. I got to do that 3 times, and then the 3rd time it went to stage 4, which, if you don't know, is the worst. Stage 5 means you're dead. So in 2011, I was given 6 months to live by the doctors, and I miraculously, through a long sort of amazing story, reversed the disease completely, and I'm now cancer-free. I'm writing a book about how I exactly did that. But part of what I do, stand-up comedy, and I do storytelling and spoken word events, and I give metaphysical sermons, and the content is my journey with cancer and how I got through it, and some of the lessons that I learned. And so that was the content of my keynote speech at the LA County Department of Mental Health. And somebody who was sitting there listening to that speech turned out to be involved with the Profiles of Hope campaign, which is an Emmy Award-winning campaign that interviews people who are in the public eye who have dealt with some sort of mental health issue and come through on the other side of it and are willing to tell their story. So it's these inspirational interviews. And I was asked by her if I would be willing to tell my story on camera, and I was a little reluctant at first because I tend to be a very private person. They wanted to come to my house, and I didn't even want to be on an episode of my own show, House Hunters, when I was looking to buy a house, because I just wanted to keep my private life private. But this felt different to me. It felt like I had an important message to tell my story and come out of the cancer closet. There's this expression, we are only as sick as our secrets, and I had kept my journey with cancer a secret because I felt ashamed or embarrassed or like a failure, and that was all just ridiculous, and I wasn't allowing the people who love me to rush in and help me. And I was literally, when I came out of the cancer closet, loved back to life. And I wanted to share that story with anyone who wanted to listen, and so a camera crew came to my house and was there all day asking me questions about my life now and my life then. And I'm really so proud of the finished piece because they took hours and hours of the interview and condensed it into a 10-minute segment. And if you go to YouTube and you type in Profiles of Hope, Suzanne Huang, you can see that. There's also a Profiles of Hope app, and there's a dedicated website. I think it's profilesofhopela.org or .com. And it has turned into, there's a 30-second PSA that they've been showing on the KTLA news during commercial breaks. And they've also been showing the 30-second PSA in movie theaters across Southern California during the previews. There's a big billboard. It's me and Michelle Enfield, who's a transgender Native American, and there's Apple the App from the Black Eyed Peas. The three of us are in the brand new episodes of Profiles of Hope. And it's just been a glorious thing because at the very end of the PSA and at the end of the interview, they tell you if you are struggling and you need help, if you have any sort of mental health issue going on, then to contact the L.A. County Department of Mental Health's hotline number, which is the 1-800 number, so you don't have to live in L.A. to take advantage of it. Too many people don't reach out for help, and then they end up ending their lives and suffering in silence, and we were not meant to go through things alone. So I'm just very, very happy that I said yes to it and broke through my resistance to wanting to do it. And I don't know if you got to see the PSA or the interview, but I think it's a magnificent thing that they're doing.
Yeah, I have to let Mauro Anello know about that because he's, first of all, I don't know if you know who Mauro is, but really great announcer. He announces boxing and MMA, and he's currently one of the commentators over at WWE. But he has always been very vocal in terms of being bipolar, and he's an advocate for mental health. He feels that it's being overlooked and underfunded.
Absolutely.
So we'll have to let him know about that.
You have to. And also, another person who's been featured on Profiles of Hope is Maurice Bernard from General Hospital, who has also been very public about his struggle with depression. And I think that it's so important. I think that there's still a stigma. I cannot believe that we're not talking about it. I mean, it's 2016. When are we going to start talking about mental health? And also, the fact that when people are feeling suicidal, I reached a point where I felt suicidal. And part of how I got there is because I was keeping it a secret and not letting anybody in and not allowing people to come in and help me and be nurturing. I don't know if you know many people who have or had breast cancer, but all the women that I've met who have or had breast cancer have a history of saving and fixing and rescuing and nurturing and taking care of and prioritizing everyone else but not themselves, not taking care of themselves, not being self-nurturing. Before I got cancer, I was eating junk food. I was not drinking water. I wasn't sleeping enough. I wasn't exercising. I wasn't meditating. I was trying to be all things to all people and running around, running on fumes, saying yes when I meant no some of the time. And getting breast cancer, because breasts are about nurturing, It's just an interesting symbolic thing. Breasts are about nurturing. So if you have breast cancer, there's a level of self-nurturing in my experience that wasn't happening. And so I learned so much about really taking care of myself that I cannot be any good to anyone. I can't give water from an empty well, and that's what I was trying to do. And now I make sure that I am doing great, that I am eating healthy and sleeping well and being creative and allowing love in and staying still and meditating and having balance. And I can give to other people from my overflow and still be full. And so now I bask in the present moment and I'm grateful and I'm taking good care of myself. And I think that that's the best thing that we can encourage each other to do as adults is to make sure that there's a balance between self-care and caring for others.
I think, yeah, a lot of it I think is, you know, a lot of us think we can just tough it out. I mean, we feel that, you know, sometimes that we're just, you know, I mean, that's really kind of old school kind of thinking too. The fact that we can tough things out, you know, we don't need anybody's help for it, you know, you know, that really we don't need anything for it. And it's kind of ridiculous to be able to think that, but especially if you're having a long-term illness or a mental illness or something like that. Sometimes in terms of mental illness, you're not even knowing that that's going on with you right now. So, but in terms of an illness, you know, sometimes you think that you have to be strong for yourself, and somebody just got to realize that that sometimes you just can't be,
right.
That you do need help.
And there are people that are committing suicide because they think that what's going on with them, that they're just all alone and no one will be able to relate to them because they're not talking about it. And all you need to do is reach out for help. There's a hotline number on the Profiles of Hope website, and you can just talk to somebody and talk it through, and really just knowing that other people have been through this and have come through on the other side. I mean, I reached a point when I was suicidal one night. It was 2008, and I had a grapefruit-sized tumor covered in blood and pus sticking out of my chest. And it's a long story of how that ever got to be like that. And I was in so much physical pain, and I was unable to sleep because of the physical pain, and painkillers never worked for me. They would make me nauseous or make me feel crazy, and so they wouldn't even fix the pain. So I was in intense physical pain and couldn't sleep for about 3 months. And the combination of those two things, plus I wasn't out of the cancer closet, so I was trying to just tough it out by myself. And one night I was by myself in my apartment because the guy I was dating at the time felt like it was too inconvenient for him to drive in rush hour traffic to come and help me. Don't worry, he's no longer my boyfriend. And so I was by myself, and I was in pain, and I couldn't sleep, and I was looking for these gauze bandages that I needed to replace to go over the tumor, and I couldn't find them anywhere, and I literally just snapped, literally started screaming and throwing things and breaking things, and I just couldn't take it anymore, and I just thought, you know what, I'm done. And then I got the idea. I needed something to solve the physical pain and to put the physical pain to an end because I couldn't take it anymore. And I decided to kill myself. I thought, yay, I have a plan that will work because I'll be dead and then I won't have physical pain. So I got very excited about this idea, and I started running around my house looking for different ways to kill myself, and I got really upset because I realized I don't have a gun because I'm a pacifist, and I realized I don't have rope to hang myself with, and I had switched to all non-toxic, natural, organic cleaning products, so I couldn't even drink Windex or anything like that. And I thought maybe I could use a kitchen knife, but then that would hurt, and the whole point is I don't want to hurt anymore. And it was like an episode of I Love Lucy, just me running around screaming and crying because I couldn't find any way to kill myself that would work. And eventually I got so exhausted from all the running around that I looked at my dog, Bonsai. I had a pug named Bonsai, and he was shaking because he was trembling because he was so afraid of me. He'd never seen me like that. And then I thought, oh no, who would take care of Bonsai? So I picked him up and got into bed. And because of all the screaming and crying and running around and breaking things, I think I actually finally had a catharsis of emotion that needed to come out. And I got into bed, and for the first time in 3 months, I fell asleep. I fell into a deep, deep, deep sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, I realized I didn't want to kill myself anymore. And so I'm so glad that I didn't. And if anybody who's listening deals with depression or any sort of mental health challenge and is considering taking your own life, please reach out for help. Please talk to a friend. Please call a hotline. Please realize that it gets better and you may not feel the same way tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to say the least in terms of, you know, I mean, you know, physical pain is one huge thing, you know, the ability to you know, overcome that and all that as well. And it was pretty much a godsend that you know, you couldn't figure out how to do it, you know. It
right.
seems like there was just so many things against you doing that
right.
that night. And then just at the point when you're, you know, you think you're about to do it, you go and you were able to fall asleep again. And that's kind mm-hmm. of a miracle there, you know, in
yeah.
terms of
it was a
you know, recovering. So yeah.
It was a miracle, and I'm really grateful that now I have a lot of people around me that I've let in. In fact, my friends, when I finally came out of the cancer closet back in 2011, I received such a tsunami of love and support. People just came in by the droves, my friends who I've loved for my whole life. People came over and said, finally, you've been gypping us out of half of a friendship. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, when we're not doing well, we tell you and you rush in and love us back to life. When you're not doing well, you don't tell any of us. So we don't get the opportunity of rushing in and loving you back to life and reciprocating. We're ecstatic. You're finally not gypping us. And I had never thought of it that way before. I had only thought, oh, I don't want to be a burden to anybody. And they would say to me, well, when we're not doing well and we tell you, are we a burden to you? And I said, of course not. I love you. And they said, well, let us love you back. So that's basically what happened. My heart got cracked open and I was loved back to life by my family and my friends and fans also. When I went on social media, I had fans all over the world flowing me their love and support and resources, and including financial donations, because I went $500,000 into debt from all the cancer bills that were not covered by insurance. A lot of what I did was holistic, Eastern, alternative, revolutionary things that were not covered by insurance. So it was my inability to work combined with all these treatments that I did over the course of many years that saved my life, but were not covered by insurance.
Yeah, I mean that's it's just so great. I mean, especially social media. I mean, I've seen so many people that have, you know, that are very shy about wanting to talk about any kind of illness and, you know, having to cover part of their medical bills. But it always seems to be like friends and family just, you know, go and they say, hey, listen, you know, this person's having a very hard time in terms of the financial situation. And we've seen so many times where people have been very generous in order to help other people
yeah.
out and all that as well. So it's great to be able to see so much support happen for you and as well. I mean, it's absolutely great to be able to listen to as well. But let's get to a happier note because your movie's coming up next week.
Yes. So not only is my health back on track, but I'm finally getting my career back on track, because when you are in show business and you fall sort of out of the loop because of some major setback, it's sort of like going from having a PhD to being back in nursery school, because, you know, all the people have changed and, you know, you have to sort of get yourself game. It's sort of like jump rope, double dutch. You have to sort of pick your time to run and jump back in there, right? And so this new movie, I'm so excited about it. Most of my career on television, and now I have a starring role in a hilarious new movie that's going to be released on April 1st in select cities across the country in AMC theaters. It's called A Weekend with the Family, and it is basically a madcap, hilarious culture clash. My daughter is dating. My husband is black, so our daughter is half Korean, half black. And her boyfriend is black, and his family is sort of a backwoods kind of ghetto-fied black family, and my family is more traditional Korean blended with black culture. And so it is one of the most outright hilarious scripts I've ever read. And the way that it all comes together, Marcus Houston and Karrueche Tran play the boy meets girl, you know, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back kind of plot line. And Wendy Raquel Robinson and Clifton Powell play the Stankershets, which are on Travis's side of the family. And Dorian Wilson and I play the Clancys, John and Sue Clancy. And truly, I don't know of any other film where it's also got heart. It's really heartwarming, and there's understanding between the Korean culture and black culture, which I think can be incredibly healing for race relations. I'm sure you know about Koreans and blacks and Los Angeles and the riots and all of the animosity. And I really think that this film, even though it's a comedy and it's lighthearted, I really think that it could do something to just help people see past differences and realize that we really are just one, and we really all just want to find people to love and have families that get along.
If you haven't seen the trailer yet, please do so. It's hilarious. Just this trailer itself. There's another plot line where the future son-in-law is actually up for a job for the father-in-law. So that kind of complicates things as well. Just from the trailer, it looks absolutely hilarious to be
it really
to separate
is. And Chris Stokes from You Got Served. He wrote it and directed it and produced it. And Chandrella Avery, who is from Napoleon Dynamite, she played LaFonda. She's also one of the producers, and she's in it. And she is the reason that I am even in this film, because she thought that I would be great to play the mom. And it truly is. I think that you will laugh out loud, and I think that you will be moved as well by what happens between these families, that sort of like the Hatfields and the McCoys or the Cowboys and the Indians. It starts out as quite the rivalry of misunderstanding and misunderstanding basically. And then there's this beautiful resolution. I mean, I'm sure that you can relate to situations where in a romantic relationship, if the families don't get along, how stressful that can be.
Probably not.
No?
Pretty much my family's pretty open. They're pretty open
really?
To whoever comes
That's
to the
fantastic.
Door.
Fantastic. So you've never been in a relationship with somebody where the families didn't get along?
I haven't. I haven't dated for quite a while, so I have. So I've been along with their family pretty well. I'm one of the few and far between people that have never had a problem with another person's family. So
that's great.
So,
now,
yeah.
How come you haven't dated for a while?
I just haven't found anybody that I really liked, really. And I have to get my stuff together in terms of myself. So you know how that is.
I do, but I also believe that when you meet somebody that you're interested in, wherever you are in your journey with yourself, you won't want to put it off and say, get back to me in 5 years when I'm a little more together.
Yeah, I haven't quite found that person yet. So to say, I don't know. We'll get there eventually. It's great to be able to see that you're back on that as well. Are you still doing stand-up?
I haven't done stand-up in a while. I'm much more interested right now in storytelling and spoken word, because there's less pressure to be funny every 10 seconds, and it's more about being authentic and telling personal autobiographical stories, where there's humor in it for sure. But I find that the audiences are a little more enraptured. You know, sometimes at comedy clubs, people are there drinking and talking, and it's almost like they feel like the comics are up there bothering them. And in a storytelling spoken word event, they've really come because they want to hear the stories. So I've been doing a lot more of that around Los Angeles. Have you ever been to a spoken word or storytelling event where there's a bunch of different people that get up and tell autobiographical stories, sort of like The Moth?
Not a bunch of people. I think the only one I can think of off the top of my head was Henry Rollins.
I went
to one of his spoken words.
Yes.
And I think that was it, I think. That was the only one I can think of off the top of my head I've ever been into a spoken word. Everything else has been comedy. I haven't been to one where there's a bunch of people. It sounds really interesting as well. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where you go about doing that. I mean, do you have a set schedule or where people can find out where they can see you do some spoken word stuff?
I'm on Facebook at Suzanne Hwang, SUZANNEWHANG, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram, and I have a website, which is SuzanneHwang.com, which I don't update as often as I should. But there's a lot of different spoken word events in Los Angeles. There's Sit and Spin and Taboo Tales and Don't Tell My Mother. There's The Moth. There's Story Salon. There's Tell It. There's so many different. There's I Love a Good Story. So if people are interested, they can just go on my Facebook page or follow me on Twitter, and you can see what I have coming up. I don't think I have one on the books right now, which is unusual. Usually I have something coming up. But I also have a recurring role on the DirecTV show Kingdom, which is wonderful. And, by the way, about the world of boxing. I'm going to guess that you've seen it. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but I should mention that a good friend of mine – kind of works on the show. He actually trained Liz Carmouche, Manalo, from San Diego. I think he has a couple of fighters that are a part of that show.
It's a really good show, and it stars Nick Jonas, right? And it's about the world of boxing, and it's really well written and well shot and well acted and well directed. And I play Dr. Lynn Bennett, who's the OBGYN to Keely Sanchez, who's on the show, and she's marvelous. So
my friend Manalo is first of all, he's a fan of the show. He's also, I think he's also a trainer. He trains quite a few MMA fighters down in San Diego. So I think he has had a couple of guys that were in there just for bit parts or something like that. So that's how I heard about that, and I was like, well, yeah. But I haven't seen it. I don't have DirecTV. I have cable, so
I got you.
Anyone
who has DirecTV, you can check it out. And also, I'm a series regular on a hilarious sitcom for Here TV called From Here On Out. And you can go to Here TV has a premium YouTube channel where you can watch all the episodes. It's called From Here On Out, and I play a crazy maid named Davina who's a wannabe actress who basically weasels her way into getting a part on this show within the show, and she's a terrible actress, and hilarity ensues because she is terrible and thinks she's amazing. And in one episode, I have a thick Korean accent on the show as Davina the maid, and I'm supposed to be playing a Scottish barmaid in one episode of the show within the show. So I'm doing a bad Scottish accent mixed with a Korean accent at the same time, and I'm acting badly. It was quite a challenge. I had a dialect coach, a friend of mine named Amy Chafee, helped me figure out how you do a bad Scottish accent mixed with a good Korean accent at the same time. Oh, someone's at my door.
We're 10 minutes past half an hour, so let's quickly sum up. You already mentioned your website and your Facebook as well, and I really look forward to being able to catch some of the shows that you're in, especially this movie that's coming out. And I think we talked about it before we went on air, that I'll be down there in L.A. Premiering my documentary down there. So hopefully you can, you'll have the ability to come down and catch it when it's down there.
I would love to.
Yeah.
When is it?
I will let you know exactly when it – it's the weekend of April 22nd, but I don't know exactly when the documentary is going to be out yet. They haven't announced the schedule yet for the film festival, but – I will let you know. We're obviously friends on Facebook, so I'll let you know.
I will be there. If I'm in town, I will be there.
Okay, cool. And, definitely, you know, we'll try to catch up in L.A. and, you know, hopefully we get some more roles going through you. Anything else going on with you?
Well, I did screen test for a big NBC sitcom pilot and got down to the wire and didn't make it in, but I'm in the game, so it feels really good. And I just booked a web series pilot as well, but I can't tell you anything about that yet. But as soon as I can tell you, I'll put it all over social media.
Okay, will do, Susan. And, you know, best of luck to you coming up, and I'll see you in about a month.
Thanks, Mark with a Q.
Yep, talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Suzanne Wong, everybody. That is SuzanneWhang. You guys can check her out. A Weekend with the Family premieres in theaters next week, April 1st. So please go and check it out if you're at the AMC theaters across the nation. Please do that so as well. If you watch Kingdom on DirecTV, look out for her as well. And it's great to be able to talk to her a little bit about her issues. And projects, projectsofhopela.com, and check out her story there as well. It's an absolutely fabulous story. It's great to be able to hear her talk a little bit about her struggles and all that as well. It's just absolutely great to be able to hear that. Okay, coming up next week. First of all, we have next week we'll have one of our good friends. Hold on one second. I'll get his name up here. I didn't have it up on the thing yet. Give me one second here. Theron Denson's going to be back with us. He's going to be doing some shows here in Vegas coming up in the next month or so. So we'll have Theron on with us next week at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, so make sure you guys check that out. Also, in a couple of weeks, I think it'll be April 12th, we are going to have Alana Starr back. She's going to be talking a little bit about the new season of Women of Wrestling and some of the projects. She has some really cool projects coming up as well. So we'll be talking to her a little bit about that, and that's coming in a couple of weeks. I think it's going to be April the 12th, if I remember officially. But I will have that posted up there as well. Definitely check that out as well. I'll leave you guys a little bit with a little bit of Suzanne. I figured I'd probably play that on the way out. We'll talk to you guys next week, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, with Rowan Denson, the Black Diamond, as he's called. So here we go. Here we go, a little Suzanne by Weezer on the way out.
Head of a girl.